Welcome to the Sacred Feminine Power Podcast, where we explore the many facets of feminine power and why it is so important for women and for men to step into this power in our world at this time. This is Emmy from Feminine Revered, and my wonderful guest for today is Mark Ireland. After the passing of his youngest son, Mark sought evidence for the continuity of consciousness after physical death. On his journey, Mark was able to connect with his son's essence and observed a variety of phenomena supporting the survival hypothesis. Interweaving profound personal experience and scientific evidence, Ireland presents a deep dive into psychic medium phenomena, spirit visitations, afterlife communication, reincarnation, and near-death experiences, pointing to the postmortem survival of consciousness. Mark is the co-founder of Helping Parents Heal, an organization with more than 25,000 members that assists bereaved parents worldwide. He has participated in mediumship research studies conducted by the University of Arizona and the University of Virginia, and he currently operates a medium certification program. Mark has also written two books, Soul Shift and the recently published The Persistence of the Soul. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's wonderful to be here today, Emmy.
Oh, it's great to have you with us, and I cannot wait for us to dive into our themes for today. But before we go there, Mark, I would love to hear from you. What does the concept of the sacred feminine power mean to you personally?
I just look at the world we live in today and the need for better balance, with the feminine energy representing to me the intuitive, the sensitive, the compassionate. And a little more of that would go a long way, I think. So I guess that's what I would share.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there. It would go a really long way if we had more compassion and intuition, or we were open to more compassion and intuition on this planet. Absolutely. Well, Mark, would you please share a challenge that you have faced on your path that's really helped you to activate this power within you?
Well, really, probably the catalyst for the biggest change of my life was the unexpected passing of my youngest son, Brandon, when he was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And that took me from a place of really being more focused on worldly achievement and career goals and things like that to a much broader, more humanitarian approach, of looking at the big picture and how I could contribute and share my gifts with the world. So I would say that was the shifting point for me, and what it's resulted in is kind of a new path where, you know, I still live in that world and still work for a living and things like that, but I'm much more focused on the ways I can contribute in a spiritual way.
Well, thank you for sharing about that, and my condolences on the passing of your son. That's kind of an incident. It's always a life-shattering and life-changing thing to have happen. And what would you say, despite all the pain and the grief that would have caused you, what would you say was the hidden blessing in that in the end?
Well, it's something we're all going to face throughout our lives because people we love are going to pass. Death is a normal part of this life, and it's something we just have to accept and understand. It's a transition to the next realm and not just the cessation of our being. So I think it's just expanded me and made me more aware of the need. It's actually unfolded a path in front of me, and I didn't have to do that much. I just had to be open to it, to follow where the path would lead to where I could serve and have a very fulfilling life that was this far more fulfilling than just working for a corporation and earning a paycheck.
I can imagine. Mark, why do you think there is such a fear of death on our planet at the moment, at least in the Western cultures? Why is death still such a taboo for us?
I think there's two factors here. One is because if you go back to the period of the Enlightenment, where science kind of separated from religion, due to the persecution of Galileo and other scientists of that era, there became this divisiveness between them. And as a result, the philosophy of materialism or physicalism was adopted by academia. So you've got people in the university setting who preach you know, atheism, basically, that there is nothing but matter, and matter creates consciousness via our brain. And then conversely, on the other side, you have more fundamentalist religious philosophies, especially in the West, that push this idea of there being a hell for people who either don't behave right or aren't saved, or these various thoughts. So I think you either have a fear of annihilation on the one hand with the secular materialism, and then a fear of a hellish afterlife from the other. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a middle point, which is more founded in kind of rational thought and what the evidence tells us, than either of those two positions. So I think that's what's caused a lot of the fear of death. And in the U.S., I mean, it's basically, they try and hide it. Everything's about youth, and all the TV shows are featuring, you know, people in their 20s. So it's even getting old is like pushed to the side, where it's not viewed with respect and with a level of understanding. Like, hey, if you're here long enough, you're going to get older and you will change.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for sharing more about that. You're really hitting the nail on the head there. And I would love to hear a little bit more about your experience in the aftermath of the passing of your son, and how you managed to then communicate with him and start to receive messages from him as well.
Sure. So I'm a little bit different than most people who got involved in this field and interested in it, because my father was actually a pretty famous or prominent psychic and medium back from the 50s through the 1980s. So I grew up with this as a daily part of my life in our household, where dad would know everything and you couldn't really get away with a lot. And then I would also see him do demonstrations of psychic phenomena that were, you know, very compelling. And periodically saw the spirit communication, where he would get messages from someone who had passed, who was close to someone he was talking to, providing details like first and last names and maybe hobbies or their favorite foods or things they did together that I could tell were accurate and true. And the people on the receiving end were torn up and crying and happy, and just I could see the effect of that. So when my youngest son unexpectedly passed, I had that to draw on. So instead of just relying on a blind faith that maybe there's something more, I already saw the personal evidence for that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the backdrop to it. After Brandon's passing, I sought to, initially, this was kind of the first thing that happened, within a day or two, I sought a direct connection. And so I went into a darkened room, which was basically a walk-in closet with no light, sat down and tried to get into a meditative state. And usually it's hard for me to clear my mind completely, but in this instance, I was able to pretty much clear my mind. And within a little period of time, I saw my son's image in my mind's eye, kind of scrolling across. And he was smiling and actually glowing, radiating joy. So that made me feel good. But then right after that, I saw another symbol. It was a cross with an oval loop at the top. And at the time, I didn't really know what that was. I'd seen it. But then I had to go, and the analytical side of me had to go Google and find out what that represented. And I discovered it was the Ankh, the oldest cross of human history, dating back about 5,000 years to the Egyptians, with the lower portion of the cross representing physical life and the oval loop representing eternal life. So what I was given was basically a puzzle I had to solve that basically could told me, you know, your son's joyful. He's in the afterlife. He's an eternal being. Whereas if I already knew what the Ankh represented beforehand, then I could have said my subconscious mind gave me that to make me feel good. But in this case, I had to go figure it out and understand what the meaning of that was. The next thing that happened within, I think it was at the 3-day mark. Now, my father had been gone a number of years by this point, but I had an uncle who had similar abilities to my father. And we touched base by cell phone when I was in the mortuary on that third day. And he said, "Hey, Mark, I wanted to let you know something." He says, "You know, last night I tried to meditate, but I got nothing. But this morning in my morning meditation, your father came to me And he wanted to let you know he was there when Brandon passed. Brandon was a little confused at first, but your dad helped him adjust. He said, Brandon wanted you to know that you're the best parents he ever could have had, which is the nice, warm, fuzzy thing we like to hear. But additionally, he then furnished the cause of death before we had it. And he said that Brandon's death was caused by a lack of oxygen in his bloodstream that caused his heart to fail. 2 days later, I talked to the physician who had conducted the autopsy, and she told me that Brandon had suffered a severe asthma attack, which drove his blood oxygen levels down to a point to cause cardiac arrest. So my uncle gave me the cause of death, along with those positive messages, 2 days before the autopsy results were revealed.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I love how it was the ankh that came to you as a symbol when you first tried to connect with your son. And it's amazing to have a number of family members that have this gift of mediumship or psychic abilities. Do you find that that's common for a number of family members to be able to connect like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, first off, within my family lineage, there was some of it on my mother's side as well, with my grandmother, my mom a little bit, my aunt more to a greater degree. And on my father's side, his grandmother, which would be my great-grandmother, she had some of that. And then my father's mother, my grandmother on my father's side, she actually became a trance medium. So and this is normal within, I mean, the people who research this, parapsychologists, the Winbridge Research Institute's one of our research center, has pretty much established like this runs in family lines. So I think while there's a spiritual component to it, there's also a physiological component to it as well.
What is the physiological component there? I'm curious.
Well, they can't pin it down exactly. There's something, you know, probably brain related in terms of the structure of the brain that facilitates that. And even though we're a spiritual being, the fact is we still function in this world through a brain. It processes our day-to-day workings and living. I think that's, you know, a byproduct of we are living in a world that, if you go back probably thousands of years, it was about survival. So you had to have a restricted awareness that focused on things that pertain to survival. And I think intuition was probably much stronger. You know, back then, if you were living out of a cave and had to be aware of wild beasts that were in the area to avoid them or whatever. So I don't know that they've pinned that down. I think one of the areas that's under has been talked about for a long time is called the pineal gland, that is an ancient part of the brain that maybe was more developed back when it was active. But today, folks are so inundated by media and sensation through smartphones and television and everything that they've lost touch with kind of that subtle voice and that sense of connection. So that's my best guess as to, you know, how that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess what you're kind of alluding there is that all of us have that psychic ability within ourselves. Most of us have just kind of blocked it, or it's been programmed to become blocked through the circumstances that we are living in, or the systems and the structures that we're living in. And I mentioned in your introduction that you also operate a medium certification program. Is that open to everyone and anyone?
It is. However, the purpose of it, let me go back to why it even exists. After my first book, Soul Shift, came out, I was had a lot of folks contact me, because in that book, I detail the experiences I just mentioned to you, but also my meeting with four mediums, modern day mediums, who are high caliber people, and share the validations I got and how consistent they were between each of them. So I was asked by a lot of folks, hey, who can you recommend as a good medium to go to? And the people coming to me were people that were in grief. They'd either had a child pass or a spouse pass or someone close to them. So while at that time I did know a number of them, maybe half a dozen, most of them were more celebrity type mediums that had long, long wait lists because of their popularity. And maybe some of them may charge more than some folks could afford. So I thought to myself, okay, there must be some other folks out there with these abilities at a high level that are just undiscovered or unknown. And so that's why I started the process and put it out there to say, hey, you know, we're looking for people who have these attributes and have a following already and are established in their field. And the reason why is really because if I'm dealing with grieving people, we need to provide them with the best possible resource because they're fragile. And if, you know, there are some folks who want to be a medium and they have a little bit of it, but they're not really at that level. So while I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, it needs to be people that are high caliber and already been doing this for a while and have a following because it's hard to pass, number one. And number two, you're reading for people who are in deep grief oftentimes. And so it can be a good reading can really be healing, part of the healing process, but a bad one can really set somebody back. So while I'd say most anyone can apply, I would say the two criteria I look for is that you're established, you have a following, and you are highly skilled at this. And I can describe the process if you'd like.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So as you'd mentioned during the intro, I did participate in a mediumship research experiment with Dr. Emily Williams Kelly at the University of Virginia Division of Perceptual Studies. And through the course of that, I learned about her protocols, what she used and how she did it. And then, so I looked at that as kind of a foundational piece to kind of follow some of that. And then I reached out to my friend, Tricia Robertson, who was the president of the Scottish Society of Psychical Research, to help refine that and boil this down into something tangible. And today, what I've got is a program where someone applying to be a certified medium has to go through 5 blinded readings with someone they don't know. These are conducted via Zoom with no video, and they're just given the first name of the sitter right at the time the reading starts. So they have to provide a reading for this person on the other end. And then the reading is recorded, and then the sitter later has to transcribe it and break it into statements that can be graded as either correct, incorrect, indeterminable, or correct with bonus points. So I'll give you an example. So let's just say the medium says, I believe I have your son here who has passed. He's got an A name and his favorite food was pizza. Okay. So let's say the sitter says, okay, I did have a son pass. That's correct. A name. Well, his name is Aaron. So that's correct. And pizza was his favorite food. So that's correct. Maybe then the sitter might say, okay, A name is pretty good. She didn't give me the name, but I'll give a small bonus. So we had 2 levels of bonus, a 2-point and a 5-point. So the sitter might say, I'm going to give a 2-point bonus for getting the initial. And getting the pizza is good too. I'll give 2-point bonus for that. Now, conversely, let's say that the medium says, I've got a son here. I believe it's your son who's passed. I think his name is Aaron. And he liked pizza with bell pepper, onions, and black olives. So if the sitter says, oh my gosh, his name was Aaron, and that's exactly the pizza he liked, they might say those are correct plus 5-point bonuses. So at the end of this, basically we add up all of the correct responses versus the incorrect. The indeterminables are things like predictions that haven't happened yet or something that the sitter just can't find out. Maybe it pertains to somebody they don't know or who lives in another country and they can't find out if it's correct or not. So we set those on the side. Unless the medium generates too high of a proportion of those, if they exceed 33% of indeterminables, then anything over that's counted as incorrect. At the end, we look at what's the accuracy of the correct versus incorrect, and they have to have at least 65% to pass and a total of 75 points to pass. So let's just say they were exactly 65% correct and they had 2 of the 5-point bonuses. They would just barely pass because they need 75 total points. Conversely, if somebody scored 75% accurate, but no bonus points, they would still pass. But I've had a lot of folks score well into the 90s in this process. And I think it's been proven to be a pretty effective process. And today I've got 41 mediums on there, and they're pretty much concentrated in North America, but there are many in other countries around the world.
Well, thank you for describing that in more detail. That sounds like a really really great process to go through with the wannabe medium, sorry to use that term, but certainly a resource that is going to be invaluable for grieving families and for anyone who's looking to connect with somebody in the afterlife that they have lost. And I would imagine is especially important for cases of unexpected deaths or sudden deaths or violent deaths. Would you agree with that?
Sure. It's hard for me to grade what's the most painful kind of death, but I suppose you're right, probably in many ways. It may be harder for someone to heal, especially if their child was murdered or something like that. And I've met people who have been through that, and it's a tough road for them to go down. And this is not a panacea. It's not a cure-all. It is just one tool in the toolbox for someone's healing. You still need, people can use therapy. It's a very helpful tool, but there's also a lot of other factors. You know, having a supportive family and friends is a real plus. Meeting other people who have been through the similar situation can help a lot, because those folks have been through the same thing as you and they understand what it's like. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where my organization or our organization, Helping Parents Heal, can come in, because they, there's other folks in the same boat. And then, you know, getting to a point where you can provide service in some way to the world to help share your gifts, because that'll come back to heal you too. Someone may not be able to do that right away, but once they are at a point where they can serve, that can make a big difference. Also, letting go of feelings of guilt, because a lot of people, especially parents, will say, I could have done this or I should have done that, thinking they could have changed the outcome, when more times than not, that's not really the case. And also forgiving others who you may be blaming for that in some way, whether that be through an accident or a doctor or something like that. Because if you hold that anger and you're not forgiving someone else, it's just really hurting you in the end. And then I'd say the next piece is that afterlife evidence, being open to evidence for the afterlife and the idea that we do continue on in some form after the physical death. And people might start with just reading books about near-death experiences, or my books, or which are more focused on mediumship and spirit communication, but also touch on these other areas as well. And then maybe at some point they want to have a reading, but I don't look at it as they should get too hung up on that and do that too often, because then they can become addicted to that, like anything else. So I would say, you have to use that in moderation. And then supplement those other things in there too for a well-rounded approach to healing grief.
Yeah, those are super, super important points. Thank you for bringing those in as well, Mark. Now, we talked a little bit about your first book, Soul Shift, but would you please share something about The Persistence of the Soul, the more recently published book, and what is the essence of that book?
Sure. So Soul Shift was more of a memoir about my journey, you know, telling you a bit about my son, Brandon, and what he was like, and then those experiences that I detailed, and then the chance or synchronistic meeting I had to have a reading with Alison Dubois, who later became famous from the show Medium, and then my meeting with three other mediums, including the fourth one, which was recorded for a Discovery Channel episode. But the next book, Persistence of the Soul, I wanted to kind of address some areas. I wanted it to be more of a scholarly book, educational book. So it actually is almost like two books in one. It still has, because these experiences continued for me. They didn't end. They kept going. So I was documenting more personal experiences of connection and validation, but also supplementing that with scientific evidence to support them, as well as historical evidence, and information. As an example, I have a chapter just on skepticism and the difference between healthy, open-minded skepticism and the debunker mentality. And by debunker, I'm talking about someone who really has a pre-existing worldview based in scientific materialism or secular materialism, who's just trying to dismiss this and not really look at the evidence, but just to find angles to try and put it down. So people really won't take that look. So I explore that and kind of show the flaws in their approach and arguments and how they try to be deceptive, quite frankly, in many ways. I have a chapter focused on religion and these phenomena, because in the Western world, there are still people with a lot of hangups about this, and they think they shouldn't dabble in these things, or that they may be evil or whatever. So I really approach that from a variety of spiritual perspectives, with a heavy focus on Christianity, because that's where a lot of the fear comes from. I'm not saying all denominations, but some that are more of the fundamentalist variety have those hangups. So I really explore the scriptural background for that. And my father always thought that was kind of strange, because you have all these miracle stories in the Bible, especially the New Testament, and these phenomena are very similar to those. You could say they're the same thing, but yet for some reason people will say that's great, you know, back in time, but right now you shouldn't do that or can't do that. Excuse me. I have another chapter on an experiment that I did with my sister who passed back in 2006. Before her passing, I talked to her about the idea for an experiment that could bring healing to other people if successful, and she wanted to do it. So that was something we did. She basically wrote a secret message, put it into a sealed envelope, initialed the outside of it, and then it was saved until she had passed. And then months later, we reached out to some mediums to see if any of them could get her secret message. So that one's kind of an intriguing chapter. I have a short chapter on reincarnation as well. Not that I'm an expert in this area, but there are people who are. Dr. Ian Stevenson did a lot of research in this area, both in, I believe, South America and Africa with indigenous peoples, where he'd hear stories of young children who recalled prior lives with a lot of detail, stating their name as it was in the prior life, maybe their spouse's name, an uncle's name, what they did for a living, all these kinds of things. And then he would go to these other villages hundreds of miles away to interview the folks to find out if there was somebody there by that name and were those circumstances correct. And he has many documented cases where those did hold true, those things held true. That's at the University of Virginia Division of Perceptual Studies as well. And Jim Tucker's taken on that research now since Dr. Stevenson's passed. So I touch on reincarnation a little bit. I have a personal story going back to when I was about 3 years old and shared that kind of recollection with my father at the time. And the researchers of this area found like kids will have these recollections up to maybe age 5 to 7, and then they fade away. So in my case, I don't remember that anymore. But I had shared some of those things with my father at the time. I would just say it's more of a scholarly approach. So some people who just want the personal stories, they could just focus on that and skip the science. Other people who are more left brain, they might want to read more about the research and the support. And some people might be interested in both and just read the book in its entirety to kind of touch base with both ends of that.
Sounds incredibly fascinating. I cannot wait to dive into that book myself and learn more about these themes. And I've read a lot of Ian's work already, and I cannot wait to read your interpretation and your explanations around this as well. So thank you for birthing this book. Now, Mark, you mentioned earlier that you are also still evolving as a medium, as a psychic. And I would love to hear a little bit more from you in terms of what kind of abilities you might have found within yourself later on this path.
Well, as we talked about earlier, you said, you know, I was implying that everyone has this. And I agree with that, but it's to varying degrees. So my father had it very strongly, and he worked hard to develop it. So he was at this very high level, and I know others who are like that, like a Gordon Smith in Scotland is very, very good at that level. And I know other people that are lesser known who are as well. In my own case, I'm not a practicing medium. Now, while I've had these phenomena, I have not chosen to dedicate myself to that at this point. I don't know if that's my ultimate path or not. I have had experiences that I'm happy to share. But I think the reason, well, I'll share the experiences and I'll tell you where I'm at now and why I'm not pursuing that, you know, as a primary focus. Yeah. So I think one of the first instances, going back to when I was a young person, my father had just done a psychic demonstration. He was going to do two back to back. And at the end of his demonstration, he says, "Mark, I'm so tired. Will you do the second one for me?" And that was said facetiously. So we were just kind of joking. So I said, "Okay, Dad, just give me the power." And he put his hands on mine. He goes, "Okay, you have the power now." He then pointed out a stranger in an adjacent booth and said, "What's his name?" I said, and I just knew, just intuitively, it just came to me, "Alan." I said, "Alan." So someone in our booth tapped the guy on the shoulder and said, "What's your name?" And the guy goes, "What?" And he says, "Well, just tell us your name." And he says, "It's Alan." So that gave me a little feel for it, you know. And then back when, around the same time, I was dating a girl, and I had a dream one night that she was seeing another guy, and I was a little bit jealous. But the funny thing was, I knew his first and last name and what he looked like. And so the next day, I was telling her I'd had this strange dream, and she said, "Well, tell me about it." And I said, "No, it was just a dream." And she said, "No, I really want to hear." So then I said, "Okay, well, the guy, you were seeing this other guy. His name was Bob Dooley, and he looked like this. He was this tall." She said, "Well, I actually dated a guy named Bob Dooley in Kansas when I lived in Kansas, and he looked exactly like that." Now, more recently, within the last few years, for a 3-year stint, I was doing talks at a church in San Francisco called the Golden Gate Spiritualist Church. This church was founded in 1924 by a woman named Florence Becker, who passed away in 1970. And by all accounts, she had abilities very similar to my father. So this church had invited me in to give a talk. And each time I brought a medium friend, Tina Powers, in to give messages to the congregation. So this particular time, Tina was bugging me and saying, "Hey, Mark, I think you're going to get a message to share with the congregation. Will you share it?" And I said, "Sure, if I get something, I'll share it." And she hounded me about this several times. Even the day we were walking in the church, she said, "Mark, if you get a message, will you share it?" I said, "Sure, Tina, if I get something, I'll share it." So we went into the church. They had a healing room, and people were getting a laying on of hands healing. And there was an organ or piano there. So I sat on the bench to that, and then I quieted myself. It was about 30 minutes before my talk. So I just tried to still my mind to prepare for my talk primarily. But then while I was sitting there, a name popped into my awareness. It was Max. But then immediately I got the name Maxine. And I thought, oh, maybe it's Maxine and not Max. And these I didn't hear them. I didn't see them. They just came to me like an idea would come to you in a very subtle way. Just popped in like an idea or a memory. So when it was time to do my talk, I finished the talk. And then I said, "Tina made me promise to share anything I might get. So I have to ask if the names Max or Maxine mean anything to anyone here." And the pastor of the church, he was very surprised. And he said, "Well, Max and Maxine were twins that were born to the church founder, Florence Becker. And they were delivered stillborn, but they grew up in spirit." He says, "I think we know who is here right now." And then afterward, he took me upstairs and showed me a painting that I believe Florence Becker had done. It was a landscape. And it showed a winding road. And at the end, he says, "See those two little figures? That's Max and Maxine." So from this experience, I could see why Tina told me to, she prodded me to say that, because when I got those names in my mind, it was such a subtle thing. I could have easily dismissed it as my imagination and not shared that. But yet they turned out to be highly significant. So that'll give you an example of some of the cases that I've had that have been, you know, that I would say, the most compelling. But to shift from having something like that happen to you in a spontaneous way and being aware of it or using your intuition for your own guidance, to say you're a medium and dedicate yourself to the full development and doing that for brief period, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that, because these people are in a stage of grief. And it's the same thing with my medium certification program, where I need them to have the best. And maybe someday I would consider trying to do that. But also in the meantime, it would cast me in a different light, because today I take more of a journalistic approach to these things. I'm able to report, and just like the book that I wrote, it would probably be viewed in a completely different light if I said I was a practicing medium. Then, you know, I'm an independent, objective observer of these phenomena, and I'm sharing my observations and experiences with folks. So that's kind of where I stand on that right now.
Well, thank you for sharing about those experiences, Mark. That's really fascinating. And Thank you for also taking that more journalistic approach, because I think it is so very needed. And you've mentioned along the way about the suspicions towards mediumship and the outright denialism of these kinds of themes as well, and how important it is. I think especially now in these times of change and transition that we are in as humanity, for more and more people to become more open and to start receiving this kind of information, this kind of knowing, this kind of connecting through their own bodies as well.
Right. And I would say it's really helpful for people in grief. If you do want to connect with someone, you don't have to go to a medium. I mean, you can, and it can supplement the other things, but you can have your own form of direct connection. There's a few ways to do that. One way I had that worked really well was one night before going to bed, I asked in a prayer for a way for a visit from my son. And I also asked to remember it the next day, because we could easily have experiences. Think of how many dreams you had that you don't remember. Mm-hmm. So in this particular instance, I saw my son vividly and we communicated, and it was actually more vivid than waking reality. So you could have something like that if you ask for it before going to bed, when you're lying in that semi awake state, and then hopefully, you know, be sure to ask to remember it the next day. So you plant that seed. People can also achieve this through a meditation, just either through a guided meditation. A number of the mediums I know will have like audio tracks for people to try and do guided meditations, where they might picture themselves in a quiet place. Maybe it was a place that they used to go to with the deceased person, or that the person who had passed loved, whether that be in a forest or on a mountain or at the ocean or beach or whatever, and just envision themselves there and ask for them to, you know, to come see them and just wait there quietly. And sometimes they'll feel a tap on their shoulder, or they'll visually see their loved one and even hug them. So that's another method, through meditation, either self-guided or just a quiet mind focused on breathing, and just see what happens. And for folks who are really in deep, deep distress, and maybe those things didn't work for them, you could also try. There's a process that some therapists use that's facilitated through EMDR. There was a man named Dr. Alan Botkin who discovered this by accident while counseling some soldiers who had PTSD, who had served in Vietnam, and took them into an altered state through this process, where they visually saw the people they had killed in battle and were forgiven by them, which had a tremendous impact. And another soldier who had basically adopted a small Vietnamese girl who he had loved very much, and she had been killed through the course of the war. And then she visited him while in this altered state, and he saw her basically grown up. So that's another approach. There are some practitioners of that who have been trained through Botkin's program. Botkin isn't doing this anymore. He's retired due to health concerns. But that's another possibility. If someone just Googled Dr. Alan Botkin, they can probably find the breadcrumb trails to who the practitioners are that do this today. And then, you know, the mediumship reading can be very good too, because sometimes people are just in too much of a state of grief and too damaged to be able to have those other things work for them. So this is the medium serves as an intermediary to facilitate that communication. But I do encourage people to wait at least 3 to 6 months. I'm not saying the process can't work that quickly, but you're probably not going to be in this. Most people won't be in a state of emotion where it's going to be best for them to do that until the 3 to 6 month mark.
Super important points there again. Thank you, Mark, for sharing all of that. And now if our listeners wanted to connect with you or find out more about your work and, of course, get your books as well, what is the easiest place for them to go to?
It's markirelandauthor.com. Mark with a K, Ireland like the country, author, markirelandauthor.com. And my website not only has my books, but it also has other media clips, including the Discovery Channel piece that I mentioned, a short documentary, I also have links on the homepage to the Helping Parents Heal organization for any bereaved parents who are looking for support. I have a link to my dad's videos, including a 1971 psychic demonstration on the Steve Allen show, which will really give people a sense for his psychic abilities and how he did that, his process. And then also there's a link to the Certified Medium site on there. So all of those things can be found on that one site.
Wonderful. That sounds really great. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. And I understand that you've got a gift for our listeners as well.
Yeah, I'm going to provide a chapter out of one of my books for you as a PDF, and I'll provide a link to you that you can share with listeners.
Wonderful. That sounds really great as well, Mark. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming onto the show and sharing more about your own story and your experiences and this really, really important work you're doing for grieving parents, for grieving individuals and families, and also about the fascinating world of psychic phenomena and mediumship. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you. Now, everybody, just for a moment, let's focus our awareness and our intention on this powerful energy that's been activated and imagine sending it to everyone and everything on our planet to remember that we are all one and that the more of us have the courage to step into our sacred feminine power and to that receiver role that we've been talking about, the more quickly our planet will also ascend and heal. Thanks so much for listening.